All right, folks, I'm back with the Louis B. Free Radio Show, Brain Food from the Heartland. I want to start this I don't want to say I appreciate people's criticism. I appreciate honest, honorable, whatever that means, criticism. I do, that has a reason. Some of the criticism that I get is just to criticize, just, you know, nasty viciousness. But I appreciate when people will say to me, and I'm sure I'm going to hear it now, Louis, it's Christmas. It's a couple of days before Christmas. Why in the world would you, be talking about death and sadness and philosophy 2 days before Christmas? And I'm going to tell you why. Because there are some sad people out there, some very sad people, and the rest of us need to be just a little bit more empathetic, to have a little bit of empathy and a little more kindness to those that may have lost somebody. And maybe that person didn't die. Maybe you lost a love. Maybe you lost a family, a four-legged family member. Maybe a family member with wings. I know someone that's terribly sad. This she's lost two cats and a bird this year. And anyone that's ever had a non-human family member understands what that pain is like. It's also a time, I think, when we need to be thoughtful. And again, I'm not saying anti-gift. I'm not doing that. Oh, the gift we need to give is the gift of love. But I will say that it is something that we can all give more of, and certainly that we can all receive. I met someone via the show earlier this year that has made an impact on me that I hope will last the rest of my life, and the book will. November Rose, A Speech on Death, Dr. Catherine Stengel. Doctor is with us, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say, please feel free to email your criticisms to me. This is a content-oriented show. I know that there's the breaking story with the former Attorney General. There will be plenty of time to talk about that. I sincerely believe that there is no more important conversation to have this morning than the one that I am about to have. So I hope that you will stay with us on this, for this very important conversation with Dr. Catherine Stengel and Dr. Michael Eskin. And Dr. Stengel, welcome back.
Oh, it's so great to be back, Louis. Thank you for having me.
You are an amazing lady, and it made such an impact on me, and so many in my audience are so thankful for your work and grateful for your work, which really came out of some great sadness. So, and we'll talk about that. Also joining us, Dr. Michael Eskin. Dr. Eskin, thank you for joining us today also.
Thank you so much, Louis, for having me on the show, which I admire, and I admire your work. So,
well,
very honored and flattered to be on your show today.
Believe me, I admire yours. You guys are doing the tough work. I'm delighted to have you both. Let me start with Dr. Stengel, and tell us a little bit about yourself, Doctor, for new listeners.
Well, I'm a philosopher, and I also, as you mentioned already, Louis, I lost my first husband when I was 33 years old, and the combination of being a philosopher and having gone through that sadness myself led to the book you have in front of you, November Rose, A Speech on Death, and I had this desire to talk about grief and about what it means to lose a beloved from a philosophical point of view, which is not an abstract point of view, but a point of view where we think about this grief in an existential way. What does it mean to, you know, what does it mean to lose a beloved? How does it change my life, my perspective on love, and what, you know, what do I have to think about that?
So, take us back and tell us, if you don't mind, a little bit more about your husband that passed away.
Well, we met when we were very young, and we had two small children when he was diagnosed with cancer. So I also, I'm talking about that in November Rose too, is I had to face death as a possibility in the future. So there's a whole chapter in that, death as future. And And then after 2 years of sickness, he passed away. And that's you know, when I went through what I call, when I walked through the valley of death from then on. But I also experienced great love in my life, and that's what led me out of the valley of death.
And when you, but not knowing that you could be let out at that point, correct?
No, not knowing. You probably, there's really that moment when you have to let yourself sink deep, and that's when I really hit what I call the bedrock of love. When you think you cannot fall deeper and there's really nothing, there's just an abyss of emptiness, then I all, you know, I was picked up by that river of love, and that was a very astonishing experience for me.
Tell me about that.
It's, you know, it's one of these, probably other people would call it a spiritual experience, but it was very important for me, and that's why I like to tell people that that what I realized that you cannot avoid the pain, that it's going, basically sinking in into the pain, but not holding on to the pain, letting it come and go, but not avoiding it in general, that you find yourself all of a sudden in that different place where you feel that you're supported by love.
Dr. Eskin, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
I am a philosopher as well, and I'm also a literary critic. And I am married to Dr. Stengel, and I've known her for a very long time. I also knew her first husband, who was a friend of mine. And so we both founded the Upper West Side Philosophers and the Independent Center for Philosophical Thinking in New York City, Dr. Stengel and I. And we've been working together for a long time now, both as thinkers, as people, and we have a family of 3 children together. And in connection with the book November Rose that Dr. Stengel wrote, I translated it into English. And it's interesting what you just asked Catherine about, how in the process of translation, I literally went through all of the things that I think are embedded in this book as potential minds of exploration and possibilities for readers insofar as they can accompany Dr. Stengel's journey as it is depicted philosophically in this book, and I think glean a lot from it for themselves. And although I had not experienced the same loss, because I don't think that losing a friend is comparable to losing your life companion, I think I do have a sense, a little bit of a sense of what this kind of loss involves. And what I found in translating the book and in my own work as a philosopher and thinker, of which maybe I'll give a couple of tidbits later on in the show, is that loss and death being the limit case of loss is really something that we live with every day. And so I think one of the beauties of Dr. Stengel's book consists precisely in the fact that she has managed to capture this limit experience of death in such a way that it radiates back into life and helps us understand and think through the problem of living with loss of various degrees, whether it's a loss, as you mentioned before, of an animal, whether winged or not, whether it's a loss of a person not involving death. And that's something that she has succeeded in doing, and that has greatly influenced my own thinking, in fact, as someone who goes through life observing, feeling, and thinking.
I'm talking with Dr. Michael Eskin and Dr. Catherine Stengel. I do want to take just a minute, if we can, talk a little bit about the about your organization and how you go out and you have you can rent or lease or borrow a philosopher. Tell me a little bit about that.
Michael, you go.
Michael.
Well, the idea was, it began because we both had the sense that the institutions, available institutions in which thinking is done, which do accomplish a lot, both, for instance, academia, think tanks, journalistic institutions, and so forth, they do exist, and they provide us with a lot of food for thought. But what we thought was missing is a space for thinking that is not goal-oriented, that is not driven by performance standards, and that is not designed to achieve certain results within a given amount of time. So we thought that both based on our own experiences, existential experiences, as people who go through life thinking and reflecting and dialoguing about it, like many others, I'm sure, that it would be wonderful to create a space and a place which would offer those interested the possibility of simply taking time out of time, as it were, without wasting any time, taking time out of time simply for the purposes of engaging in the passion of thinking.
How?
And 'cause we deeply believe that thinking clearly, and this is not at the cost of the body or physicality or of emotionality, but we believe that thinking, passionate thinking, and thinking with clarity and discipline and seriousness really has a very, very ameliorative effect on our daily lives.
Tell me how, for the two of you, and Dr. Stengel, tell me for how, what, how has philosophy, the study of philosophy, being a PhD in philosophy, how do you feel that it has enhanced your life?
See, Louis, I had this, a professional crisis, a moment of crisis, I think, particularly when my husband was sick. Nevertheless, that was the time when I went through with my PhD, so it was not a, you know, that profound of a crisis, but it was a crisis that related to the way philosophy is taught in academia, that sometimes, let me give you an example, is more of a slideshow of a mountain, you know, of a hike than the real hike, or a slideshow of a concert than being in the concert and listening to the music. And so I always had this feeling that philosophy, really, when it's practiced in the right way, is so deeply important for your life. And I wanted to test this out, basically, and that's when I wrote November Rose. I thought, here I have all this expertise that I gained in academia, but now I also wanted to become effective in relation to these very existential problems, to one at least, which was grief in my case. And I think that's what we're also trying to do with the Upper West Side Philosophers, is to offer a way of practicing philosophy that is really generating an experience of what it means to think philosophically and to think slow, to think deep, and then to apply that to your own life in your own way without following certain prescriptions.
And we don't do enough of that. I mean, it's very obvious that we don't take the time to do that. You know, people, they always say, well, I'm good at multitasking. Well, you know, something, you're losing something. If you're multitasking, you're not concentrating, you're losing something. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think Dr. Eskin has a beautiful aphorism, actually, relating to that, which is called On Dialogue, if I'm not mistaken.
And maybe, Doctor, do you want to read that?
Yes, I'd love to read it. It's, again, this is, I'm reading here, if I may simply divulge the source, I'm reading here from one of my latest books, which I published under the pseudonym Julian David, and it's called Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life, and it consists of a collection of philosophical snapshots, I call them, aphorisms, short philosophical essays in which I try to capture with as much clarity as possible flashes of philosophical insights that somehow are designed to provoke thinking and to make my readers think more than anything, rather than giving them final answers. So this one is called On Dialogue. On Dialogue. True dialogue is rare. More often than not, we talk at rather than with our interlocutors. What looks like dialogue is, in fact, bilateral monologue.
See, to me, when you hear that, and when I read that in your book, you're so on target with that. Forgive me. I mean, I know that's not a good way of saying it, but that's just, you know, that's what we do. We're talking at people too frequently than with. Correct?
Yes. You know, I think that's really the case. I think one of the problems of communication and interacting with others, both according to the ways we are taught to interact, but also based on our human psychology. Very often I have found in my experience, and obviously everything I say philosophically is in one way or another, and has to be based on my own experience from which I extrapolate and which I enrich through observation and conversations with others. So one of the problems that I've found in myself and in others is that while listening to somebody else, rather than listening and being open to the other's intervention and the other's ideas and the other's words, we're already so busy preparing our own response that in the process of thinking what we're going to respond to it, we miss, you know, a good percentage of what is being told to us in the very moment of dialogue. So very often I found both in myself and in talking to others that I actually respond to the very first part of something somebody else may have been telling me, and which may have already been answered by the very person talking to me. And this is how I think most of those moments of talking past each other rather than with each other happen. So I think it takes great skill, and I'm in no way suggesting that I am a master of that skill, but I think it's something that I at least try to aspire to. It takes great skill to be able to craft your own response while talking to somebody else, while at the same time giving this person your full attention.
I have to tell you, Dr. Erskine, and I love that. And there's a couple other things I'm going to request from that you read from your book,
sure.
And that book, Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life by Julian David. And you get more information at your website, correct? Westside-philosophers.com, or you can link from Louis Free Show or go directly to westside-philosophers.com. My guests are Dr. Catherine Stengel, and Dr. Catherine Stengel's amazing book is November, I was going to say lovely, wonderful book. May hear November Rose's speech on death and think, lovely and wonderful. Well, it is, and if you read it, you'll understand. Julian David's Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life. But I want to say this, that I think that when you say that, it makes me think of what I say to people that haven't been interviewed a lot and they're nervous, especially people that are in the studio, but I also say this to folks on the phone. I said, you know, don't feel you've got to answer quickly. Take a breath. Let it oxygenate your brain and think about the question instead of jumping to an answer. Because it makes me think about what you said. People are already thinking of the answer when you start forming the question,
yeah.
Whereas if they would take a second and think about it, it's not who answers quickest, it's not Jeopardy, it's not,
correct.
You know, you don't have to buzz in with the right answer. The right answer may be the more thoughtful answer, and it may not be right or wrong, it's your answer, but if you take a minute and think about it as opposed to trying to answer quickly, I think politicians always want to have that soundbite answer and they want to be quick with it. If they would take a breath and think about it for a minute or so, they might be better off, correct?
Exactly, but that's what I love so much about your show, Louis, is that it really is the only show I have been on that practices dialogue as dialogue and not just an exchange of answers and questions that are ready-made, basically. That I really love about you.
I completely concur.
Thank you so much. Doctors Catherine Stengel and Michael Erskine are my guests. Michael wrote the book under the name Julian David, Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life. Dr. Catherine Stengel's book, November Rose, A Speech on Death. More information at westside-philosophers.com. You're listening to Louis B. Free Radio Show. Brain Food from the Heartland. We'll be back with much more right after this.
I don't think I need to be forgiven. Well, I am crying inside. Though they drag me by a wire through the storm that cracks the sky, I am quiet inside. rage and tears filled my eyes, but now I believe I see much clearer. My clarity did not come easily. You might say it was knocked into me, but now at least I know who's in the mirror. I am quiet inside, though they drag me by wire through the storm that cracks the sky. I am quiet inside.
Tracy from Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends. Tune in to the all-new WASN AM 1500 to hear Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends, where Jeff, Sandra, and I will be stimulating the mind and engaging in conversation. Chime in daily Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. to Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends. See you there.
Attention, everyone. Greyhound is big news. We're... yep. Dropping our fares. So whether you ride Greyhound to go home, back to school, or visit friends, the price of your ticket is now... you got it. Dropped. Now you can travel more than ever and for less than before with Greyhound's new fares. Oh, now that one hurt. With Greyhound's new lower fares, you can go more places and save your cash for when you get there. See a ticket agent or visit Greyhound.com today to save. Prices may vary in select cities.
This is Tony Jackson from the Weather Channel with the Youngstown Warren Weather. We've got a wind chill advisory. That's in effect until noon today, so bundle up. We've got a chance of a flurry and snow shower for the afternoon with highs only in the mid to upper teens. Tonight we'll dip to 9 degrees. Tomorrow we'll see the clouds stick around. Chance of snow showers for the afternoon with a high near 27. And Wednesday we'll see cloudy skies. Chance of a rain shower for the afternoon and temperatures warm up with highs in the upper 40s. This is Tony Jackson from the Weather Channel on 1500 WASN.
Just a small investment in gold could protect your assets from inflation, the falling dollar, or a Mideast war, says USA Today. The Fed has stopped raising interest rates to avoid a recession, so the dollar has resumed its fall and gold is rising. Gold anywhere near $600 is a great bargain, according to Swiss America. Call now for your free Gold Rush Part 2 information kit, a $25 value, complete with Rediscovering Gold book, DVD, and magazine. Yes, gold is still the trade of the decade for long-term protection and profit potential. Find out how easy it is to put yourself on a personal gold standard. Protect your hard-earned assets with hard-owned assets. Call today.
For your free gold investor's kit, call 800-978-3907. That's 800-978-3907. Your gold investor's kit is a call away. 800-978-3907. That's 800-978-3907.
Some thoughts from John Cleese.
Ah, yes, the meaning of life. Well, as one who has often pondered this question, let me help. The answer is twofold. Yes, there is life, and yes, it does have a meaning. Okay? Oh, too general? You want more specifics? Well, I know just who can help. There is a philosopher near you. Talk to her, or him, at your local college or university.
A message from the Philosophers of America, celebrating 100 years of thought.
Get up in the morning, and you see that crazy sun. Keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sometimes when you're doing simple things around the house, maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tired to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while. Hold me in your thoughts. Take me to your dreams. Touch me as I'm falling into view. When the winter comes, keep the fires lit, and I will be right next to you. Engine drivers headed north to Pleasant Street. Keep me in your heart for a while.
Touch me by Stanley Kunitz. Summer is late, my heart. Words plucked out of the air some 40 years ago when I was wild with love and torn almost in two. Scatter like leaves this night of whistling wind and rain. It is my heart that's late. It is my song that's flown. Outdoors all afternoon under a gunmetal sky, staking my garden down. I kneeled to the crickets trilling underfoot as if about to burst from their crusty shells. And like a child again, marveled to hear so clear and brave a music pour from such a small machine. What makes the engine go? Desire, desire, desire. The longing for the dance stirs in the buried life. One season only, and it's done. So let the battered old willow thrash against the window panes and the house timbers creak. Darling, do you remember the man you married? Touch me. Remind me who I am.
Keep me in your heart for a while.
Ladies and gentlemen, back with the Louis B. Free Radio Show, Bring Food from the Heartland. My very special guests are Dr. Catherine Stengel, author of November Rose, A Speech on Death, and Dr. Michael Eskin, who has written under the name Julian David, Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life. Information on both are available at westside-philosophers.com. I bet I couldn't say that again if I tried like that and butcher it like that. westside-philosophers.com. Both tremendously important books that will, I will say without reservation, will make an impact on your life. Let me rephrase that. Will make a deep and lasting impact on your life. And I first read November Rose in preparation for an interview that Dr. Stengel and I did a while back, and then Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life. And what I love about that is you keep that around and you read a segment of the book, a page of the book, which may be a long page, may be a sentence or two, and you think about it. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do, right, Dr. Eskin?
Yes, that's the idea. I think this is precisely how I envisioned it, reading it and then letting it sit and just letting what you've read do its own work as you proceed with your daily life.
I think it was, I said, like marinating. You know, it's like like that. It's like a Bunny's pomegranate and lima bean salad. You know, if it sits overnight, it actually tastes better the next day. Something like this, you know, if you let it sit in your mind a little bit and think about it, actually even has a greater impact. Dr. Stengel, will you read, please, from November Rose's Speech on Death?
Yes, I would love to. And I wanted to go back to the very beginning when you said, you know, this is... People might ask, listeners might ask, you know, why talking about death, you know, 2 days before Christmas and the holiday season. But I think many of us will be, you know, together with family members. It's unavoidable who have lost recently or years ago a beloved. And my book is about how to examine your emotions and assumptions that come with facing someone who lost a beloved and who's grieving. And I think if we all come into the room this Christmas with a little bit more humbleness and And awareness of the emotional situation of the one who's grieving and the one I call the survivor, then we'll all have a more loving and Christmas with more light in our hearts.
Yes.
And so what I find very important is this moment of respect for the sacredness of the memories of the one who is the survivor who has lost a beloved. And I'll read a short passage that talks about this. November Rose, A Speech on Death. The all and oneness of memory is holy. In all holy places, we are profoundly alone and all and one. Only in the spirit of love, not under the sign of death, do the rituals of memory reveal themselves as the beloved's living presence.
When you read that from your book, November Rose, tell me about the impact, reading your words that you wrote a while back. What's the impact on you, on yourself?
It's difficult to say. This is the beautiful translation my husband made, Michael Askin, who is with us on the show today. So there's also almost like I almost feel like someone else wrote that. I feel very connected. It's totally tied to my own experience and thinking because I wrote it. But then there's also this moment when I think it came from a place that is somehow deeper in me that I wasn't really aware it existed, and it wrote itself from that place.
When you hear that, Michael, what's your reaction?
It's very strange. Typically, this is the first book I've ever translated in my life, and typically I write my own books and Catherine writes her books, and so it was a very interesting experience for me, and listening to it now, for me, in a kind of mirror image, it is always Catherine's book, even when she reads it in English. Well, for her, it may have come from a very deep place inside of her. It's very clear for me that even though it is my language and it is my intonation and my linguistic melody that I do hear in the translation, you know, in the way that you know when somebody tells you in a conversation, well, you said it yesterday, and they repeat what you said, and you know deep down, I couldn't have said that because my mouth, my tongue would never use this kind of wording. And so I do hear that, but it still remains Catherine's book. But whenever I hear it, I'm still very impressed. And I mean, we're both the most critical of readers, especially when we read each other's writing, both philosophical and non-philosophical. And it's still every time I open the book or every time I hear Catherine read it, either on the radio or in readings, I'm stunned by the uniqueness with which she has managed, in my view, to capture with utter simplicity such complex matters and with such clarity things that other philosophers throughout history have tried to capture in such a way that it's simply understandable. It hits right home, both on an emotional level and an intellectual level, without sentimentalizing anything and without also giving in to this, our tendency to feel pity for ourselves and to exercise a certain kind of sometimes improper pity with regard to others, rather than simply allowing ourselves to be there for them and to listen and understand both emotionally, physically, and intellectually what's happening.
I've got to ask you, will you tell me a little bit, Michael, about meeting Catherine, the development of the relationship? Do you mind?
No, not at all.
Catherine, you don't mind, do you? Catherine?
No, I don't mind at all.
No. We met about 20 years ago, actually, as students. I was studying at the University of Munich then, before I went back to Concordia College, where I got my BA, and Catherine was at the University of Munich, and we met in our very first, I think it was for both of us, the very first philosophical seminar that we attended at the university. It was on French post-structuralist theory, and that's when we met, and we became friends thereafter, and we had been friends for all these years, and I was married too a long time ago. So we were friends, Catherine and her husband, her first husband, and I and my wife were friends, and we would see each other every once in a while. But you know, between Catherine and me, our friendship was both a real friendship and also an intellectual friendship. So whenever I would write something, I would always try to have Catherine give me feedback or even criticize my writing before it got published. And you know, and then life took its own course, and things happened, and the rest is history. And then at some point we realized that there's more than friendship after her first husband passed away. And that's where we are today.
Catherine Stengel, tell me a little bit about times of the year, if you don't mind. And when you think about your husband that passed away, how is it around certain times of the year? How do you deal with it? What are some of your suggestions? And maybe read a portion of the book, November Rose. What do you say?
Yeah, my experience was, first of all, and that's also what I'm going to read about, that it's very important on days like Christmas, on holidays, and other holidays and anniversaries, to realize that that a day has, you know, that many hours and that many seconds, and it cannot all be pain. So I think the most important thing for me to learn was to let it come and let it go, and not to hold on to the pain, because when we hold on, we just reiterate the pain intellectually or in our mind, basically, but and force ourselves to feel it. But we can really feel it and let it go, and then we can also be happy. So I think that's important. I'd like to read something about that, if I may.
Tell me where you're reading from. If you don't mind, for those following along at home.
Sure. That's on page 42. Okay. It's about the memory waves.
Okay.
And happiness, and I think that is just the appropriate passage, because there are many situations that we might encounter on holidays, and one of them is, of course, that you feel the lack of the presence of the beloved you have lost, and that makes you sad. But I also experienced something different, which is that I was actually happy. But when you're happy, you experience all of a sudden that happiness and sadness at the same time, and that's something new I experienced in this phase of grief, and I want to read that. Just as breathing may be fast or slow, just as breath goes in and out, so are we exposed to the memory waves of death. Memories, bodily sensations, and emotions come and go. Sometimes we summon them. Most of the time, however, they overcome us without our bidding. In moments of happiness especially, the survivor is overcome by waves of sadness. In happiness, we come close to a totality of experience in which our quotidian selection mechanisms give way to all-encompassing vision. The presence of happiness is closely related to the presence of death, absolute presence colliding with absolute absence. Precisely because in happiness we see more clearly and distinctly, opening up to life's sensual flow with every pore, the absurdity of non-being too can more easily penetrate our every pore. Life is, death is, but the other is no more.
Will you continue, please?
In happiness, love expands, stretching beyond the limits of its intentionality and into a cosmic dimension. The happy transgression of this world, however, remains tied to it. The bliss we experience on the ocean during a sunset or being in love is a bliss weaned on living existence. And precisely because in happiness the miracle of life feels so intense, the sting of death, too, is more deeply felt. For the survivor, happiness is always linked to to being conscious of the fact that the other can no longer experience life on Earth.
From November Rose, A Speech on Death, Dr. Catherine Stengel. What advice or suggestions would you two give for people reaching out to others where you know somebody is has lost someone recently, I say this because I know how it impacts people when they have a non-human, a death, a pet. I know how it has been with me. I lost one very close, one of my rabbits. And I know some of you laugh and ridicule that, but earlier this year, a little sweetheart that was rescued from a terrible abusive situation and passed away earlier this year, and I know some others that have lost close, or somebody that knows that a family member is very, very ill. What might you say to them this holiday season?
Shall I start? Or
yeah, please. No, go ahead, Catherine.
Well, I said a little bit about it before, but I think it's very important to examine your own emotions before you enter the dialogue with this person. And one of them, I mean, you mentioned that some people would just immediately jump to the conclusion that a rabbit couldn't hurt you or shouldn't, and may even laugh about it. And I think that is so important to examine your own emotions and your own assumptions about what they might feel. You can't know. You really can't know. All you see is that someone is grieving. And I think my suggestion would be a companion, a good companion. And that means don't force them to be sadder than they are already. Don't force them to be happy if they are not. Just be with them. Mm-hmm. And it will change anyway. If you allow them to change, they will change in their emotionality and in their perception of that holiday.
And I hear what you're saying, you know, again, don't judge if somebody, I know someone who had two cats and a bird. The bird got outside and they weren't able to get it back, you know, and they know in the weather, they know that, you know, in this climate that the bird is passed away as a tropical bird. And, you know, people, don't judge someone else's sadness. I've often said on the show that when a rabbit that we had a few years back that died, I cried more than when my mother died. Well, there are some reasons for that, and my mother lived a long and full life. Would I rather she lived longer? Well, sure, but she was very, very ill at the end, and the rabbit had a short life and a very abusive life, and until he came to live with us. But you know that sadness is very, very, very deep, and we shouldn't judge others. If someone said it was a friend, or if it was a cat, yeah, or a dog, or a fish, you know, we shouldn't judge other the relationships that others have. Correct?
Yeah. What we judge is not their sadness; it's their love. You know, you have as much sadness for a loss as it reflects the amount of love you have for this this beloved person or animal or living thing in your life, and I think it is so important to respect that love, and it's actually that is the source for healing, and you don't want to ridicule it.
And if I may add, I think that one of the you know, thinking about death a lot as part of our lives, both daily lives and lives in general, I think one of the problems, and I completely agree with Catherine on that, is that we don't examine profoundly enough how we ourselves, as those who enter a situation in which somebody else may have lost somebody, whether an animal, a pet, a person, what we ourselves think and how we feel with regard to the very fact of death. And I think one of the logical fallacies that occurs is that we create degrees of value in regard to death. So the death of an animal or the death of a small pet, the death, let's say, of a lizard, is not of the same value as the death of a person. Now, from a legal perspective, that's probably true. And if you hit an earthworm, you won't go to jail, as opposed to if you murder someone, you probably will. But from an emotional perspective of the one who has lost a beloved, and again, now we're returning to what Catherine just said about respecting somebody's love, death is not, I think, parsable in terms of degrees, because life itself is just life. And so once life is lost, there's a potentially equal amount of sadness involved in all loss of life, depending on to whom it happens. And I think this is something one should consider as one tries to look and see through one's own prejudices with regard to any given situation. And the other thing I wanted to add is that I think it's very important to understand how, whether we feel comfortable or uncomfortable with the fact that death is out there. I mean, I've seen it happen with relatives of mine and friends of mine who lost friends, parents, loved ones, especially during 9/11, which I experienced firsthand. There is a kind of anxiety.
Michael, I'm sorry. Give me 5 seconds. Sure. To ID the station. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
The all-new WASN 1500 AM Youngstown.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So there's a kind of, unwillingness or reserve and diffidence when it comes to actually talking about it. It's a little bit like a child that closes its eyes when it sees something that's not agreeable with him or her. So I think if we feel uncomfortable with death, then it will be very hard for us to actually be a companion, as Catherine mentioned, to somebody else in an authentic and sincere kind of way. And this could mean that we don't say anything. This could mean that we tell the person, look, I have nothing intelligent to say, so I'm just going to be quiet, but that doesn't mean that I don't feel with you. So there are all kinds of ways in which one can accompany a person and be with him or her and for him or her. But I think the person who has lost somebody or something that was very dear to him or her will only feel and perceive this as authentic if it is really authentic, and this can only be as of the moment at which we take account, before ourselves, if you will, as to how we feel about death.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking with Drs. Catherine Stengel and Michael Eskin, and we'll be back with more on the Louis B. Free Radio Show, Brain Food from the Heartland, right after this.
The Louis B. Free Radio Show, Brain Food from the Heartland, an adult-oriented show intended for and only for a mature adult audience. Listener discretion is advised.
Emergency is the immune system pumping, energy boosting, fizzy, fruity drink mix packed with vitamin C, B, minerals, and electrolytes. Listen to what our customers have to say.
Warning, consumption of Emergency may result in spontaneous ergotonic, chest beating, squat thrusting, and or the desire to have your own theme music. An overall sense of well-being is not uncommon with Emergency and may lead to long lingering hugs with complete yet attractive strangers, morning perkiness, and a strong burning desire to tell people you feel zesty. Please do not consume Emergency before funerals, book readings, or court appearances. Emergency makes you feel good, really good.
If you or someone you care about is considering getting a reverse mortgage, you need to call the Reverse Mortgage Helpline today. The Reverse Helpline is here to help seniors and family of seniors decide if a reverse mortgage is right for them. Reverse mortgages are structured to help seniors get cash out of their homes or refinance with no mortgage payments. Seniors can start living their lives again without financial pressures or a mortgage payment. To qualify for a reverse mortgage, this is important. The homeowner must be 62 years of age or older and have approximately 40% equity in their home or more. Remember, approximately 40% or more in equity and 62 years of age or older for the reverse mortgage program. Call right now. 800-704-1662. 800-704-1662. Call us now. 800-704-1662.
$1 million. That's how much the Business Software Alliance will pay in rewards for qualifying software piracy leads. If your company is copying software illegally, your company is breaking the law. Blow the whistle and report software piracy confidentially, and you may be eligible for rewards of up to $1 million. Call 1-888-NO-PIRACY or visit nopiracy.com. Up to $1 million for qualifying software piracy leads. Call 1-888-NO-PIRACY or visit nopiracy.com. Terms and conditions apply at nopiracy.com.
This is Tony Jackson from the Weather Channel with the Youngstown Warren Weather. We've got a wind chill advisory. That's in effect until noon today, so bundle up. We've got a chance of a flurry and snow shower for the afternoon with highs only in the mid to upper teens. Tonight we'll dip to 9 degrees. Tomorrow we'll see the clouds stick around. Chance of snow showers for the afternoon with a high near 27. And Wednesday we'll see cloudy skies. Chance of a rain shower for the afternoon and temperatures warm up with highs in the upper 40s. This is Tony Jackson from the Weather Channel on 1500 WASN.
Do you feel trapped with your debt problems? Can you only afford to make the minimum payments to your credit cards? Are you receiving collection calls? Now, there's a real solution to your debt problems with American Financial Solutions, a trusted nonprofit organization. We'll provide you the financial tools and debt management solutions to help you get out of debt.
800-978-4819. 800-978-4819. 800-978-4819.
This car is being tortured to death. It's using conventional oil to maintain maximum horsepower. It ain't pretty. Now here's the same model car maintaining maximum horsepower with Castrol Syntech. Music to my ears. Want to push your car harder? Bring it on. Because this torture test proved Castrol Syntech 5W30 maintained maximum horsepower longer than the leading conventional oil. See the torture. CastrolSyntech.com. It's more than just oil. It's liquid engineering.
Hi, this is Tracy from Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends. Tune in to the all-new WASN AM 1500 to hear Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends, where Jeff Sandra and I will be stimulating the mind and engaging in conversation. Chime in daily Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. to Morning Coffee with Tracy and Friends. See you there.
Do you have a debt problem? Well, now you can finally do something about those collection calls. You can only avoid your mail and the phone for so long. That's why you need to call the Debt Solutions Network. We have agents standing by right now to assist you with your debt problems. Credit card debt, collection accounts, medical bills, and repossessions. Call now for relief.
800-814-5077. That's 800-814-5077. Not available in all states.
Don't like the things I see, but I don't think I need to be forgiven. Well, I am crying inside, though they drag me by a wire through the storm that tears filled my eyes, but now I believe I see much clearer.
The road not taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both, and be one traveler long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy, and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
Ladies and gentlemen, back with the Louis B. Free Radio Show, Brain Food from the Heartland. I'm talking with Dr. Catherine Stengel, her book November Rose, A Speech on Death, and Dr. Michael Eskin, whose book Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life, written under the name Julian David. More information is available online at, and again, you can link from Louis Free Show or go directly to westside-philosophers.com, westside-philosophers.com. And again, I love the logo of the thinker and the yoga posture. I think it's wonderful. I'm wondering if you would both read from your books. Catherine, I'll ask you first, if you don't mind.
Yes, I would love to. We're talking about assumptions that we make sometimes, you know, about how someone will feel who lost a beloved. And one of the assumptions is that, you know, I have heard that several times, not towards me, but other people talking about other people saying, well, but you know what, he lost her his wife, or she lost her husband, but it has been years ago, and how can they be so sad? So this is the passage on time, and maybe it will help understand how grief is timeless and how it has to change in a different way in order to heal over time. Time cannot heal on its own, for if, in time, we resist the passage of time, we become as taut as a rubber band that is sooner or later bound to snap, clinging to the standstill of death. As life moves on, will overstretch the soul like a string that must eventually burst. Clinging to the tuning of death will invariably put the entire instrument, the entire person, out of tune. But it takes courage to retune the string of death in the key of life and to harmonize all other strings accordingly. Only if time joins forces with courage can it heal. The courage to let go of the last thing we have left of the other, his death, and instead to choose love and hence life.
I love that from your book, November Rose, and I do want to. I appreciate you reading that. That's one of the pieces of that book that I absolutely love. And Michael Eskin, if you would, please.
Yes, I will read three brief snapshots of thinking or aphorisms that I think are quite apposite for the season and in the context of our conversation. And the first is called On Thinking and Sadness, and I wrote it in response to a book that came out a couple of years ago dealing with the fact and making the claim that thinking inherently makes us sad. On Thinking and Sadness. Some say that thinking makes you sad. What nonsense. If anything, thinking makes you realize that what makes you sad is you. Thinking is a most effective and lasting remedy for sadness. Then I would like to read something that is called On Tidal Waves from my book Philosophical Fragments of a Contemporary Life. And it was written in part in response to my experiences during 9/11, to my experiences as somebody who was friends with Catherine's first husband and who loved both people. And in response to my experience as a human being in general, who has encountered the phenomenon of death in his own life, in his own family. On Tidal Waves. Only rarely, if at all, are we given the chance to change the course of our life. In the aftermath of a cataclysmic event, perhaps, or in those rare moments when life itself hits us like a tidal wave, flooding the shores of our being and hurling us into the truth of our future. Whether we choose to live by our truth or whether we choose to betray it, there is no way back. And the last one that I would like to read may be the most apposite in terms of the question of how we deal and talk to and engage with those who may have lost someone and whom we consider our friends, and whom we want to be friends for in those tough times. And this is called on friends. A friend not only wants you to be well and do well, but he's actually happy with you when you are doing well. It is often easier to offer sympathy and support to a friend in need than to celebrate a friend's prosperity and successes without envy. Like love, friendship is not based on need.
I love that. I've got to ask you, on page 58, on lawyers, and it's very apropos here,
yes.
and for all of us, but would you mind?
No, not at all.
Page 58.
This aphorism on lawyers, unlike many of my acquaintances, friends, and many New Yorkers, and probably many people in the world at large, I like lawyers.
I always say on my, I don't engage in lawyer jokes, and I will tell you the only thing standing between us and a government coming at us are lawyers, the good lawyers in Manhattan. I mean, I think of Attorney Floyd Abrams, anyhow, go ahead, I'm sorry.
And so why I wrote this particular aphorism or this particular snapshot of thinking is because I always try to consider any subject that I happen to be thinking about in its best possible light. So I do not select, you know, the bad lawyer as an example for every lawyer, but the best possible lawyer. And what I like about lawyers is that they're essentially philosophers. You know, a good case is like a philosophical problem that needs a philosophical solution or at least a philosophical treatment. So, on lawyers. The real reason why lawyers have a bad reputation is neither because they are greedy and cannot be trusted, nor because the world would, presumably, be a less litigious place, less litigious and hence better place without them, but because we're too disingenuous not to impute our own greediness, litigiousness, and mendacity to them. Our lawyers are as greedy, litigious, and mendacious as we ask them to be on our behalf.
I think that's great. I'm thinking about that on a lot of levels. Listen, I want to thank both of you two, Dr. Michael Eskin and Dr. Catherine Stengel for joining me on what I believe is a very, very important dialogue, very, very important segments for the show at a very important time. You two are wonderful, and again, I know this is very important for people to hear and to think about what both of your works and to think about that this time of year. I mean, as we get ready to end this year and go into the new year, it's time for us to, we should always be thoughtful, but now more than any time we need to be thoughtful of the year gone by, our friends that are still with us, that are no longer with us, those that we love that are no longer with us and still with us, and to think about the next year. And you two are just a wonderful addition to the show. Dr. Catherine Stengel, November Rose, a speech on death. Dr. Michael Eskin as Julian David, philosophical fragments on a contemporary life. I want to thank both of you for participating on the show today, and I look forward to many, many more times with you both.
Thank you so much, Lou, for having us on the show. It's a real honor and a pleasure, and thank you for the conversation.
Thank you
thank
both.
You. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you both very, very much. We'll be back.
Keep me in your heart for a while.